Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Kristen Rand, who's an attorney and the legislative director for the Violence Policy Center in Washington, D.C., a national nonprofit organization working to stop gun violence. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kristen Rand.
Thank you very much for having me.
And since the shooting in Aurora, Colorado, all we're hearing from the media and from our politicians are platitudes and piety and lots of talk about getting through this, getting past this, coming out stronger at the other end, but no mention of what to do about it. Is there some weird disconnect here in our country where there are certain things that we simply can't deal with, even though they're staring us in the face?
Well, I think there's a great hesitancy among policymakers, particularly at the federal level, to talk about gun control out of sheer fear of the National Rifle Association. And I think the average person in America does make the connection and does see how outrageous it is that we have assault weapons and 100-round magazines like those used by the shooter available to civilians readily. I think the average person thinks that's outrageous, but it's the policymakers who can't make that connection.
Or presumably don't want to. I mean, the mayor of New York is trying to shame both presidential candidates. He said on the radio program, Mayor Bloomberg, that maybe it's time for the two people who want to be president of the United States to stand up and tell us what they're going to do about this, because this is obviously a problem across the country. Now, the president is going to Aurora, Colorado on Sunday. So this is clearly an area, again, that can't be discussed by politicians. If the citizens can talk about it, why not the politicians? I guess the answer comes back to the NRA.
Yes, well, Mayor Bloomberg is absolutely right, and I think he described exactly the problem, that we have these assault weapons freely available, we have firepower available to civilians that far outstrips that which is used by your average police department, and this is the natural result. And this will not be the last shooting. We will face this again in a short period of time. And it is incumbent on the President of the United States to stand up and say the value of American lives is greater than the wants of the gun lobby. And we certainly agree with Mayor Bloomberg on that. And you have a lot of politicians in California who have been leaders on this issue. Senator Feinstein has been at the forefront of trying to ban assault weapons for decades. And she deserves a great credit for that. California is actually a great example of a state that stood up to the gun lobby in the wake of similar mass shootings and said, enough is enough, and you've addressed the problem effectively. And we can do that nationally if we have the will and the leadership from President Obama.
But at this point, and usually when these massacres happen, and they do happen with a grim frequency here in the country, and of course it's almost a year to the date from the massacre in Norway, which was a very unexpected case in terms of that particular country. Regrettably, people, I imagine, don't think it's totally surprising here in the United States. I recall some time ago in Australia, there was a mass killing with assault rifles, and immediately the government, which was a conservative government, basically did a buyback of all guns, long rifles and assault weapons and handguns, and there's never been an incident since. So there is a fundamental difference here, and I guess I don't want to be a broken record, but it comes back to the NRA.
Yes, it all does come back to the NRA, and America should be looking to other countries who successfully dealt with this issue. Australia, the United Kingdom, both reacted very aggressively in the wake of similar mass shootings and have not experienced similar events since. And I think you bring up Norway. That's a very important example. That shooter got his weaponry in America. He sought out a Mini 14 assault rifle that's very similar to the one used by the shooter in Colorado because it was the most military-style weapon available. That gun was made in America and through a loophole available in Norway. He ordered his high-capacity ammunition magazines from the United States. So we see in other countries that do put a high value on human life and do take steps to prevent this, that shooters come to the U.S., to arm themselves. And we have to stop this, or we're going to see many, many, many more Colorados in the near future.
Well, ironically, when the U.S. Invaded Afghanistan after the 9/11 attacks, in the material that they captured from Al-Qaeda, they discovered the Al-Qaeda handbook. And in the Al-Qaeda handbook, jihadis were advised not to bring weapons into the United States. If they wanted to do damage in the United States, all they had to do was purchase the weapons in the United States. So even Al-Qaeda is aware of the availability of guns here in the United States. Again, I'm speaking with Kristen Rand, who's an attorney and legislative director for the Violence Policy Center in Washington, D.C., a national nonprofit organization working to stop gun violence. You make the point, which I think is very, very logical, that firearms are consumer products. And if an airplane crash or the major car crash or food were poisoned, people would immediately be, getting the government, the oversight parts of the government, to address these problems. So you're saying that this is not politics, it's public health, that you have an industry that manufactures a product that's completely unregulated from a health and safety standpoint.
That's exactly right. Firearms are the last consumer product manufactured in America not subject to federal health and safety regulation. And that's why we have an industry that's become so highly militarized and sells assault weapons and the high-capacity ammunition magazines used inevitably by every mass shooter, going back to the McDonald's massacre in San Ysidro, California in the early 80s. We have an out-of-control gun industry, and it's the direct result of the power of the gun lobby in keeping that industry exempt from federal health and safety regulation.
And that's the point to make, isn't it, that the NRA is not some Second Amendment freedom operation that's trying to preserve the Constitution, as they do wrap themselves in the flag and continually refer to our freedoms and our Second Amendment rights. But the bottom line is that they are just simply a lobbying group for gun and ammunition manufacturers. And that's where they get their money from. And the money that they get from the gun makers to make guns so accessible is the money that they use to effectively blackmail politicians with the threat that if you don't go along with us, we'll run somebody against you in the next primary.
Well, that's exactly right. The NRA has become nothing more than a shill for the gun industry. They get direct contributions from many of the major gun manufacturers. One of their greatest benefactors is a man who made a fortune off selling ammunition over the internet, like the 6,000 rounds of ammunition that the shooter in Colorado apparently purchased. The NRA's agenda is built around pushing through policies that will sell more guns. And they're more and more desperate to do it because actually personal gun ownership in America is on the decline. So what they're desperately trying to do is sell another gun to someone who probably already owns 10 or 12 other guns. So they have to make the more militarized, more lethal, because they have to keep lining the pockets of the gun industry.
So why then is there any traction in this freedom argument? I mean, why do people have to have personal arsenals as a sort of exemplify their freedom? I don't understand culturally what this means to equate freedom with unlimited firepower.
Well, there's a small minority of Americans whose basically entire lives revolves around guns. And I can't really explain it to you, but it's a very strong culture. And, there are many people who spend all of their time pushing policymakers to weaken gun laws because they see it as some sort of icon of personal freedom. It's a very, very, very small minority of Americans, but they're the ones who constantly communicate to their policymakers at the local, state, and federal level. And I would say to your listeners, if you're sick and tired of this, of these mass shootings, pick up the phone and call your legislator. And it doesn't matter if they're already, good on the gun issue, like Senator Senator Feinstein. People like her need support from people who say enough is enough. And if people who are tired don't start speaking out, this small minority of people obsessed with their guns will continue to control the debate and control public policy and ensure that we see more and more incidents like Colorado in the near future.
But even the people with these arsenals at home, nobody's planning on taking their guns away, even though there's a certain absurdity there. I'm wondering, though, since I'm talking to you from Hollywood, California, across the street from Universal Studios, and as you know, movies and movie posters and television shows invariably have the main characters pointing a gun at you or at the audience, whether they're some wispy little blonde who plays an FBI agent or one of the male leads in the so-called A-list male leads in the bigger movies. The long and the short of it is that I don't understand the cultural connection here between guns and heroism. In other cultures, for example, in Australia, if you were to pull a gun out in a fight, you would be looked upon as a lowly coward, as being despicable, or probably even worse if you pulled a knife. I mean, you know, manly men use their fists, that kind of notion. Why is it in America that we connect guns with heroism instead of with cowardice?
Well, I think it's really a result of the job that the gun lobby and the gun manufacturers have done of selling this idea that guns are equal to freedom. I mean, it's just a really decades-long campaign, and again, that is bought into by a very small minority of Americans. I don't think most Americans see it that way, but a small vocal minority does. And, you know, we do need to start changing the culture, but I don't think the problem is guns and movies, because people across the world see movies made in America and don't lash out the way this man did in Colorado. So we say, let's put the focus on real guns, not on guns in the movie. And there is a cultural aspect to this. There is a sick gun culture out there that glorifies these military-style weapons and people who are completely obsessed with them, and that is a part of the problem. But the bigger problem is that our leaders will not say no to those people, will not say, you do not need to own an assault weapon. You do not need a 100-round high-capacity ammunition magazine. There's a point at which it's too much of a threat to public safety. You can have your sporting shotguns and rifles, as you pointed out earlier. No one's going to quote-unquote, take anyone's guns away. We just want to limit the firepower that's available on the civilian market. I think it's very important to point out that the shooter in Colorado recently bought these guns. They're new guns. It's a new assault rifle he used. It's a new high-capacity ammunition magazine. We have to start now to ratchet back this level of firepower and begin to reduce the likelihood that these events will happen in the future.
Well, just in closing, Kristen Rand, the NRA has been very effective, as we've mentioned, in basically cowering the Congress into submission. They had this totally fraudulent Fast and Furious issue that they pumped up, which was the height of brazen hypocrisy, because the NRA is the reason why these gun stores on the southern border have no oversight and no restrictions in selling unlimited amounts of heavy firepower to the Mexican drug cartels. They're the problem, but they managed to, through their political muscle, and to intimidate a bunch of Republicans into voting for this bogus contempt vote against Eric Holder, which again was just surreal, given the role of the NRA and the Tihad Amendment, which prevents any sharing of information amongst law enforcement in this country for guns that are caught at crime scenes, guns that have actually been used to kill people. there's a blackout of information. It's just surreal to recognize the insanity of the laws that they managed to pass and the despicable, cowardly nature of the Congress. But I imagine it all comes down to campaign finance, doesn't it? If you take them, the only way to stop this extortion against the Congress is which is via the money that they threaten the congressman with, is to take the money out of politics. I can't think of any other way to do it.
Yes, campaign finance reform is incredibly important, not just for gun violence prevention, but for every other progressive issue, climate change, food safety. I mean, you can go down the list of things that are important to people in their daily lives, and the campaign finance system has an adverse effect on that system. And actually, just recently, the Senate voted on the Disclose Act, which would have required people, organizations who engage in electoral activity and run ads like the NRA, to disclose exactly where that money's coming from. For example, if the NRAs were using gun industry money in attack ads, they would have to disclose that. And the NRA took a big role in killing that bill in the Senate. So you are absolutely right. We need campaign finance reform. But, you know, the other part of why the NRA is so effective is their grassroots. Again, the people who are just obsessed with their guns and who sit, you know, by their computers waiting for the instructions on who to call, when to call, and are in constant contact with their state and federal legislators. And we need some people who care about gun violence prevention to take the time out of their day to call their legislators, and now is a really important time to do this. And again, California is a perfect example of a state that stood up to the gun lobby, has very strong gun laws, and has seen a very significant decline in gun death over the past couple decades because they were strong enough to stand up to the gun lobby. And we hope that they will be a model for the nation as we move forward in the wake of this horrendous shooting in Colorado.
Well, Kristen Rand, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Kristen Rand, who's an attorney and legislative director for the Violence Policy Center in Washington, D.C., a national nonprofit organization working to stop gun violence. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how the super rich are hiding $21 trillion of their treasure around the world.
Be good or be gone. Be good or be